This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. During most of the Cold War, from 1962 to 86, my guest Anatoly Dobrynin was the Soviet ambassador to the U.S. From the Cuban Missile Crisis to the beginning of Perestroika, he was the primary link between Washington and Moscow. He's written a new memoir about those years called In Confidence. A review in the Sunday New York Times described the memoir as surely the most revealing account of the Cold War to come out of the Soviet Union. Now Dobrynin lives in Moscow and serves as a consultant to the Foreign Ministry of the Russian Federation. Dobrynin says that in Washington he was granted access that others found astonishing for the ambassador of the Soviet Union, and his own government in Moscow gave him unprecedented latitude. But it was, after all, the spy versus spy era, so I asked him if his home or his embassy office was bugged during his years in Washington.
Offices, I hope not. But home, I guess it was.
Did you go around looking for microphones?
Not me. I have many other things to do. Well, let me put it this way, frankly. When it was a new building, we have now a new building in Washington, D.C., when it was over, we find about $200 in our new embassy building. Well, when you build there in Moscow, your engineers find something, bucks too. So it was a mutual intelligence war.
Now, you write in your memoir that your office in Washington, D.C. had a double layer of walls. And in between those walls, there was a magnetic force.
Yeah. This was a way of shield defense against bugging. I don't know how effective it was, but at least our engineers believe this is effective enough to shield ambassador in his small office against listening devices from outside.
Now, did you ever worry that the Soviets were bugging you? That your own
Soviets?
Yeah, that your own people were.
Oh, no,
were bugging
no,
you.
No, no, never.
Never?
Never.
Okay.
Why should they?
Well, just to check up on you, make sure that...
Well, I think they couldn't check up on me because I was so free-going ambassador to many people where they couldn't check really anything. When I was going, my predecessor, unfortunately, most of them were sitting in the embassy. They didn't want to go anywhere. It was a heritage from Stalin, which really was just to stay and to speak as minimum as possible with the foreigners. Well, I was in a little bit a new breed of Soviet diplomats. I was much more free-going, and I discussed. So I didn't have any idea that they could bug me. Why? There is no need, because if they wanted, they could learn from me.
So tell me more about how you saw your style as a new breed of Soviet ambassador.
Well, I was, first of all, when I met with the American officials, I used to go alone. During the Stalin period, it was must you have somebody with you just to be sure that the conversation was within the certain kind of limits, so to speak. But when I went there and I decided that in order to have a confidential talk, so to build this confidence, at least to the minimal extent, I need to talk with the American officials, if possible, tête-à-tête. Then it give you a chance to speak more freely than it was just everything is put on in writing or through the interpreter or note taker. But if you just sit and relax and then we can know each other for many months, you take it at ease when you discuss even very official documents, much more business-like and sometimes even friendly atmosphere.
There has often been a fear in the United States that the Soviets were trying to interfere in American politics, trying to exert some control over American politics.
How?
You write about one instance. You write
How?
About one instance in which the Soviet leadership told you to offer money to Hubert Humphrey for his presidential campaign.
Well, they put it assistance, not money as such. But including financial assistance, too.
Other kind of assistance?
Assistance, including financial assistance, if you like. But it was the only one stupid thing they make it. Never before or after, they never repeat it. I was against from the very beginning.
So
we shouldn't do it.
So the Kremlin wanted Humphrey to win the election over Nixon because Nixon was so staunchly anti-communist.
Yes, that's true.
So who told you to offer him assistance?
Well, I get a telegram from Moscow. It's a decision of Politburo. You have to go and do this one. And I objected. So they sent me, it was Gromyko who sent the telegram. He sent me second telegram that said, this is a decision of Politburo, so please speak within one way or another with the Humphrey. Maybe he needs some help, which you could give him in order to be elected. So I again said that it's very dangerous things to do, and that will not help at all. But they say you should do it. Well, I spoke, I knew Humphrey quite well for many years, and he understood from the first word. So he said, thank you very much for the good attention from Moscow. I don't need anything.
So tell me how you made this offer to Hubert Humphrey in such a way that he knew that your heart wasn't in it, but it was your job to offer it.
Now I couldn't really repeat because I don't recall what happened in word by word. My heart was definitely not in it, and he understood quite well.
Did you think for a moment he'd say yes?
No. 100% no.
The Politburo wanted you to support Humphrey so that Humphrey would win over Nixon. Of course, Nixon won that election. And what surprised me was in the re-election where Nixon and McGovern were running, the Soviet Union, your leadership wanted Nixon to win over McGovern. Why?
Because a relationship which exists between Nixon administration and my government was good. So they decided why to change the horses, so to speak, if possible, to continue to work with the man, with the president, with whom we have already made some good agreements. Take SALT I. It was a really breakthrough in arms controls. Never was done before in our relationship. So a relationship with developing and business-like, so atmosphere, and we think it's much better to have the president we already know for 4 years than to change and completely have another unknown man.
It was ironic to me. You seem to have a better relationship with the leaders, the American leaders who supported the Cold War, as opposed to some of the more liberal American political leaders who were more receptive to forging a better relationship with the Soviet Union?
Well, I'm answering a very simple answer. You are really saying as if you are a theoretician.
As if I'm a theoretician?
Yes, you are speaking right now like a theoretician, but not a practical man or practical woman in a diplomacy. We look at them, what kind of practical results we have with the president in our treaties, agreements. So it's not what they're saying publicly or not publicly or background. Nixon have a very bad background from our point of view, from point of view of Soviet-American relations. But in the practical diplomacy, in practical activity as a president during the first 4 years, we find that he was constructive enough to find agreements, sign some agreements. So it was all right with us. We don't really care specifically whether he has a label of anti-communist or not. We look about it on a practical way.
Well, you talk about President Reagan, for instance, as using very harsh words publicly about the Soviet Union, but behind the scenes being much more conciliatory.
But really, and this is conciliatory, it's true. But during the first...
friendly rather than conciliatory.
Well, friendly, we might put it really friendly. But the question is, during the first presidency, we do not have any constructive government-to-government relation during this during the Reagan period.
During Reagan's first term?
Yes.
No good relations?
Yes, no. We don't have any practical relationship at all.
Mm-hmm.
But from the second presidency, we have a really good practical relations, which we're improving each month. Little better, we have a 3 major agreement signed with him on arms control, and there was 4 meetings on a top level. He has more than any other president of the United States, top level with our government leaders. So it changed. So if it changed, we don't hold him because on the first term he was not good one. So he became better constructive, and we felt it as a way to develop. So on the second term, it was quite all right.
Yes, you write in your memoir that a great paradox of President Reagan was that he first heightened the Cold War, then helped to cool it off.
Yes, true. This is his philosophy. My impression was really, when he came to power, he thought that United States is not strong enough to, and for him, the president, to negotiate from the position of strength. So he spent 4 years, first 4 years, really to build up arms forces of United States. He spent twice as much as on a military budget, etc. But after 4 years, he felt he's strong enough and he now could speak and negotiate from the position of strength to find more peaceful relationship between our two countries.
Who was the American president you worked with that you found most difficult to deal with?
Well, it was difficult with Reagan on a first presidency. On a second, it was easy to deal with him. Well, as for the others, I think it depends on the situation. For instance, with Carter, he was with many with the good intentions. He really wanted to have, but the tragedy was and is that during his period, we have a very better relationship between two countries. But his intention was always good.
Who was the Soviet president that was best and worst to deal with?
But there was very few of them, really, because at that time it was Khrushchev, then there was Brezhnev, there was Andropov, and there was Chernenko, and then it was Gorbachev. Well, I may put it, if you like, very briefly. Khrushchev, he was very emotional fellow. He really couldn't control his emotions, as sometimes he doing. In general, I think he opened, in a way, a door to negotiation with the United States, but it was a very bumpy road in dealing with them. And Brezhnev, he was more relaxed, so to speak, but he was a man who worked together with the other Politburo, because Khrushchev sometimes overruled Politburo and make his own decision, emotional decision. So it was rather a mixture, combination of collective leadership and his own. With Brezhnev, it was always collective leadership. He never went against the majority of Politburo. And, well, Chernenko was nothing really. It was completely zero in our policy history. Andropov was a good one. He probably the most knowledgeable president we have. Not president, he was the secretary general. But he died rather soon.
My guest is Anatoly Dobrynin. He was Soviet ambassador to the U.S. from 1962 to 86. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Anatoly Dobrynin, the former Soviet ambassador to the U.S., he's written a new memoir called In Confidence. Did you ever feel like any of the American or Soviet presidents that you worked with were willing to use nuclear weapons?
No. Answer is 100% no, from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because I spent too many years in your country, and I know how that developed, so I didn't really believe that you are going to attack us suddenly with the nuclear weapons. As for our, I knew too perfectly well, because one thing, when I first thing which was given instruction by when I was appointed as ambassador, I was the youngest ambassador in the United States from our diplomatic service. Khrushchev invited me to the Kremlin, and he said, "Ambassador, your number one task is avoid by any cost any war, especially nuclear war, with the United States. This is number one task you always have to keep in mind." And all others, beginning our president or the chiefs, they always repeat me the same. So I knew that there was no any plans for immediate attack, etc. I knew from there, and I was sure about you. But it not was the case in our own government. Let me put it this way. During the Reagan period, especially during the first period, there were some suspicions, rather strong suspicions in my country, and not in country too, but within the Politburo, that he might be to do something. I remember Andropov once told me directly, "You could expect everything from Reagan. So be careful and watch very carefully about him."
Let me ask you what might strike you as an unusual question.
Go ahead.
Okay. I know when I was a girl growing up, I used to have nuclear war nightmares all the time, right? And there were nuclear war horror movies and nuclear war political movies, and the whole country was obsessed with nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Did you ever have nuclear war nightmares?
Me?
Yes.
Well, not at all.
Never?
Never. Well, you see, if you compare to nations during that period you just referring to, exactly, you gave already explanation. In your country, you have a mass media, movies and press, etc. When you created on a certain period of your history, a really mass madness about the nuclear things. In my country, we don't have this. We were not that influenced by mass media about the horrors of the nuclear war as you. That's why you have much more nightmares than we have it, because we were not influenced in, to the extent you were influenced during that time.
So did you ever feel closer to the United States than to the Soviet Union during that period of 3 decades when you lived in Washington?
But it's a philosophical question. It depends what do you mean closer. In what sense closer? I am Russian, so it's I'm Russian, but closer, well, I like many things in the United States.
Well, look, what things did you like better about the United States?
No, in general, the way of living, of freedom of expression, this kind, you could get all this style of life, really, not that restricted, not disciplinized. It's another kind of things you could much more free to discuss, to write about this. There are many really still style of life, which you may like or may not like it. I like it.
Are you sorry that the Soviet Union collapsed?
Yes, I am.
Why?
Because I, one who believes it was not inevitable for the Soviet Union to collapse. Second, it was really our people, as look at now, they lived now worse than they lived before, on a social side, I mean, on a well-being, on a material being. They are now going through the very difficult life. Great majority of my population, as of now, 80% live below the standard of living, poverty. Well, it was not really paradise during the Soviet period, I should say, but it was slow from year to year, going on, build up improvement. We have, if we take a social system, all education was free. Now, it's many kids are running around the streets. They couldn't pay because their parents couldn't pay this. And we really pick up, well, many fishes, not you, but the fishes from the capitalism, or rather of a free market system.
You say that you wanted to write your memoirs to serve as a warning against any recurrence of the mistakes of this century. Give us an example of a mistake that you think can be averted now.
Well, it's question. It's not the worry. The whole history of our relationship, it's really missed opportunities, a lot of them. Well, major mistake was what we were doing. We were fighting each other on all the in all areas during this Cold War period. We just take it, for instance, an example. Kennedy period, when you have 3,000 warheads, nuclear warheads, we have 300. Afterwards, we were so angry with each other. It was Cold War, all the president, my secretary general. We built 35,000 build up. And now we come to the situation when we, after series of agreement or treaties with you, we come to the situation, to the last agreement which was signed between between your president Clinton and Yeltsin. It's really practically the same figures which were during the Kennedy-Khrushchev period. So why we spent 30 years fighting each other, spending billions and billions of dollars in order to create a new destruction, arms for destruction, nuclear things? Missiles, cruise missiles, MIRV, and then now we agree it's nonsense. We agree that MIRV should be destroyed. We agree that missiles, medium range, should be destroyed under the Treaty of 87. They're destroyed. We agree that the intercontinental strategic missiles should be destroyed. We agree already for 50% destruction, and now our two president, last president, they agree to bring it to the 30%. So you see, now we come into the situation when really we started the whole process. So is it not stupidity from both sides? What we have done, spending so many energy and really doing not good for your own country or for my own country? This is, I think, major mistake because it's misconception.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Anatoly Dobrynin is the former Soviet ambassador to the U.S. His new memoir is called In Confidence. This is Fresh Air.